Welcome to the Father Jim Willig Gospel Teachings Podcast, presented by Heart to Heart, a Catholic media ministry. Father Jim was a well-known and much-loved diocesan priest from Cincinnati, Ohio. Inspired by God's Word, for many years, Father Jim presented a weekly Bible study on the Sunday Gospels. In 2001, Father Jim went home to the Lord after a battle with cancer, but his recordings and teachings live on to inspire thousands. First, we hear from Father Jim's good friend, Jesuit priest Father Michael Sparrow, who opens this podcast by proclaiming the gospel reading. Then, Father Jim's illuminating gospel teaching follows.
A reading from the Holy Gospel, according to Luke. Tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to listen to Jesus. But the Pharisees and scribes began to complain, saying, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." So to them, Jesus addressed this parable. A man had two sons, and the younger son said to his father, "Father, give me the share of your estate that should come to me." So the father divided the property between them. After a few days, the younger son collected all his belongings and set off to a distant country, where he squandered his inheritance on a life of dissipation. When he had freely spent everything, a severe famine struck that country, and he found himself in dire need. So he hired himself out to one of the local citizens, who sent him to his farm to tend the swine. And he longed to eat his fill of the pods on which the swine fed, but nobody gave him any. Coming to his senses, he thought, "How many of my father's hired workers have more than enough food to eat, but here am I dying of hunger? I shall get up and go to my father, and I shall say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son. Treat me as you would treat one of your hired workers.' So he got up and went back to his father. And while he was still a long way off, his father caught sight of him and was filled with compassion. He ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him. His son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son.' But his father ordered his servants, 'Quickly, bring the finest robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Take the fatted calf and slaughter it. Then let us celebrate with a feast, because this son of mine was dead and has come back to life again. He was lost and has been found.' Then the celebration began. Now the older son had been out in the field, and on his way back, as he neared the house, he heard the sound of music and dancing. He called one of the servants and asked him what this might mean. The servant said to him, 'Your brother's returned, and your father slaughtered the fatted calf because he has him back safe and sound.' He became angry, and when he refused to enter the house, his father came out and pleaded with him. He said to his father in reply, "Look, all these years I've served you, and not once did I disobey your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat to celebrate, to feast with my friends. But when your son returns, who swallowed up your property with prostitutes, for him, you slaughter the fatted calf." He said to him, "My son, you are here with me always. Everything I have is yours. But now, we must celebrate and rejoice, because your brother was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and has been found." The Gospel of the Lord.
This story of the prodigal son is probably the greatest short story that's ever been told. The gospel opens with this beautiful line, setting the stage. We hear the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus, at which the Pharisees and the scribes murmured, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." Keep in mind, to eat with someone is to, what we would call today, have communion with them. To have communion with them means to be sharing deeply and intimately. How could someone as holy as Jesus is be having such intimate communion with someone who's so unholy as these public sinners? And then Jesus tells this story. A man had two sons. Parenthetically, both of them were lost. The younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the share of the estate that's coming to me." So the father divided up his property. According to the Jewish law of the time of Christ, the firstborn son would receive a double portion of his father's estate or his inheritance. And so that figured out that this younger son, in this case, would receive a third of the father's property. And this property was handed over to the children upon the death of the father. Now, to ask for this property, this inheritance, before the father died, although it was sometimes done, was in a sense a slap in the face, or better yet, a kiss of death. It was like the younger son saying, "Dad, I really don't care what happens to you." He wasn't looking after his father's welfare, which the children were supposed to do. Even after the inheritance was given them, they're to use that inheritance to care for and provide for their father in his retirement. This son gave his father that proverbial kiss of death, as if to say, "Dad, I don't really care what happens to you." Looking just after his own self-interest, he then went off to a distant land. Now, everything in his story has a certain beautiful symbol and meaning. That distant land is that pagan land, far away from where mom or dad could watch him, far away from what they would have taught him and brought him up to be. So we hear this happening now. Some days later, this younger son collected all his belongings and went off to that distant land where he squandered his money on dissolute living. Let your imagination go wild here, huh? Dissolute living means literally immoral living. We don't know exactly what his immoral behavior was, but what we can surmise is that certainly it would have brought shame to his father and to his family. When the son wasted all his money, he was left in dire need because of a famine. Now realize again, this famine, what is it? It's that when we reach the proverbial rock bottom of our life. And for this young man, it was going to work on a farm where the guy sent him to feed his pigs. Now, literally, his life had gone to the pigs, huh? Especially understanding that for a Jewish person, this was truly hitting rock bottom. For a Jew was forbidden to ever feed or raise any kind of swine. So we can translate this to mean, not only did this young man, Junior, if you will, lose his morals, he lost his faith. And not only did he lose his faith, he lost his face. He lost a sense of his true self. But then, in this pigsty, this young man, Junior, comes to his senses. Literally, in the Greek, it's translated, he comes to himself. It's like he rediscovers his true self. And when we really rediscover our true self, that always is a new conversion. A call to be true to ourself, and to be true to ourself, we have to be true to God because we're made in God's image and likeness. We're true to what we've been taught and brought up to be. And so this brings this young man to a realization of his need for conversion, which leads him to what? A true confession. He says to himself, Father, I've sinned against God and against you. I will no longer deserve to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands. This is the rehearsal of what the son needs to say to his father as he realizes this very important point that sin is not only an offense against the person, but it's an offense against God. And ultimately, it's an offense against our true self. And so he truly has a change of mind and a change of heart, and it turns him around to a change of direction of his life, and he heads back home. This is always the way to conversion, coming back home. Home is the place where we're one with God and one with each other, most especially our own family. And so with that, he's willing even to face what he knows inevitably will be the rejection and the abuse of the entire village, who will look shamefacedly upon this young man for the kiss of death that he gave to his father. But he's willing to assume that, even to assuming the role of a servant. So with that change of mind and heart, he sets off for his father's house. And we read, while he was still a long way off, can you picture this in your mind? Still so far yet from truly coming back to a full conversion, because maybe part of his conversion was just like, hey, look, I need to eat. There's a lot of self-interest in this conversion too, you know. And so he was a long way off, but yet we hear his father caught sight of him. What does that suggest? Suggests to me that I just imagine this, that every day the father must have gone out to the place longing and looking, praying for a son to come home. Not unlike many of us who keep praying and hoping that our children would come back home, home to God, back to church, a home in terms of that emotional distance that sometimes keeps us apart, even though we could live under the same roof. Praying, hoping, this father was then deeply moved to catch sight of his son afar. We're told he ran out to meet him, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. What we see here is, in terms of a father in a Middle Eastern culture, acting totally out of character. His emotions, his love, just were welling up in him, and he could not contain himself. He ran out to his son. Now again, to the audience hearing this story, they couldn't imagine, first, such a father acting in such a way, but even less, they couldn't imagine God running after a sinner. Do you get it? Because they couldn't get it. God running after a sinner? Maybe accepting him after he confessed and repented, maybe. No, this story takes it so much further. The younger son, true to his rehearsed lines that he's gone over and over in his mind, no doubt, throws himself down and says, "Father, I have sinned against God and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son." And how many of us would say, "That's for sure"? And how many of us have felt that ourselves? Whenever we sin against God, who could say we deserve to be called God's sons and daughters? Who among us could say that? We don't. Fortunately, that's not how our God thinks. And isn't it interesting? He was only halfway through his rehearsed speech, maybe not even that. And as soon as his father heard him say, "I don't deserve to be called your son," he interrupts. He intervenes. He almost seems to say, "Don't talk like that. No son, no daughter of mine will ever say that because of my fatherly love." A love that how many of us can understand, except maybe you who have children, and know that nothing will ever stop you from loving your children, no matter what. And with God, there's nothing we could ever do to make Him love us less. For that matter, there's nothing we could ever do to make Him love us more. So much does God love us. And as soon as his father then hears his son say, "No longer do I deserve to be called your son," he acts as quick as he can to correct that kind of thinking and to restore him to the deepest bond of family love. And immediately, snapping his fingers, calling the servant, says, "Bring out the best robe." And then he asks for a signet ring. Put a ring on his finger. That ring represented the son who could carry on the father's business. Remember how letters were stamped years ago with the ring saying, "Okay, this is the word of authority, huh?" He's restoring full authority to a son. Mind you, he wasn't at all trustworthy. I mean, this is incredible love of a father. And then, "Give my son shoes." Shoes, again, being another symbol for restoring his sonship, because and not allowing him to be a servant. The servants often went without shoes. And so that was just another symbolic action taken to restore him to be a full member of the family. Most especially, he says, "Now prepare the fatted calf." The fatted calf is the symbol of the great feast that happens in heaven every time a sinner comes back to God. A fatted calf, I learned this past week in studying this commentary, is that it referred to the cattle that was special in terms of, in contrast to the cattle that were fed on grass. The fatted calf, and remember it's always the fatted calf, it's not a fatted calf. It refers to the one and only fatted calf that was stuffed with grain to put on extra weight, to provide extra tenderness, that was preserved for the greatest feast, and so was a sign of the tremendous esteem. And it's this calf that was killed that would feed more than 100 people. Which is to say, in the days before refrigeration, what was killed and prepared had to be eaten by more than 100 people. Implied in that is the fact that the father wanted to throw a whole party for the whole town. I mean, you get it? It's incredible. One would say it's the father who was prodigal, because prodigal literally means wastefully extravagant. And it's his prodigal love of the father that wanted to feed the whole village. You see, in terms of how we as church are asked to celebrate the return of one among us who has been away. And this is the love of God that always pours over in rich extravagance. And so concludes the first half of the story, the first part of Jesus' message. Refer back to the opening line where the scribes and the Pharisees are observing Jesus eating a feast with sinners. And they say, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." And so we know Jesus was preaching what he was practicing. And he was living what in fact was happening in heaven. This is how we are called to be with and for each other. This is the heart, the tender mercy of our God. Then begins the second half of the parable. Never to be seen. It's the second act that I think is sometimes missed, but like many times in any kind of great drama or play, it's the second act that really unfolds the deeper meaning and brings things to the fitting conclusion. Here we see the elder brother. Typical, perhaps, of the oldest child, he's very responsible. And the first thing you see him doing is he's out in the field working, of course, like an elder child would. He always worked hard. He never disobeyed his father. He did everything right, except one thing. He didn't have his heart in the right place. And learning of the younger brother's homecoming, he could not himself come home. Keep in mind what it meant to be in a distance from home, a distance from the heart, the hearth of God's love, burning for us, for all of us, sinner and saint. Again, the father has to go out toward his other lost son. Again, pleading, praying, asking him to come and join in the celebration of reconciliation. In fact, it was the role of the elder to be co-host with the father whenever through a large party or celebration. The elder brother had the responsibility of welcoming the guest and helping the servants know what to do. This son somehow failed in his primary responsibility, which is to share the feast of love. It seemed, you know, he could do everything else right except this. Could not this describe many of us who come to church? We're there because it's my Sunday obligation, Father. I'm doing my duty. And yet, at the same time, our heart could be so far from God if we end up judging others or looking down on other people. You see, this part of the parable is directed to all of us. And we hear maybe ourselves in the elder brother who seems to cry for justice. All the while, the Father speaks of mercy, speaking almost two different languages. But here's the language of God versus the language of man. The elder says in reply to his father, who comes out and begs him to come back home, he says, Father, for years I have slaved for you. Isn't this a point of irony? First, the younger brother saying, don't call me a son, I need to be a slave. Now this guy saying, I'm acting like a slave. It's like neither of them really get it, what it means to be a son or daughter in the kingdom of God, huh? Do we ever get it? I don't know. Maybe only after we've been away a while and then come back home, you know? Maybe it's only when we lose what we have, you know what I'm saying? That we can really appreciate what is given to us all along. This elder brother doesn't get it. He's still living under a law and order type of spirituality. You understand? That spirituality that captures and contains so many of us today. Few of us graduate to a deeper degree of mercy, to seeing that what we do in life is in a wonderful invitation to the great life. Do we think we're doing God such a great favor, keeping all the commandments? Excuse me? Hello? These are given to us to help us. We don't always get that. But you can hear it in these words now, the elder brother. I never disobeyed one of your orders, yet you never gave me so much as a kid goat to celebrate with my friends. Well, how often have you heard your kids talk like that? It's not fair. It's not fair. And the parent says, you're right. It's not. It's better than fair. It's better than fair. Don't you get it? It's called mercy. He doesn't get it. The kid continues, and then this son of yours. Well, you notice, he refuses to acknowledge his brother. This son of yours. after having gone through your property with loose women, the father says, "My son, you are with me always." Of course, in certain ways, he isn't. By saying that, you know, God's saying, "I'm with you." Isn't God with us right now? And everything I have is yours. Think about it. Everything God has is ours. The tragedy of the older son is that somehow he fails to recognize his position of privilege in living with the Father, that he does share everything with the Father, that any time he could have asked for something and his Father would have given if it would have been good for him, huh? As God would for us. But sadly, tragically, this elder brother, this older son, is blind even now to the fact that his Father is extending to him this very moment the same loving concern he seems so jealous about that he gave to his younger brother. He's giving to him right now his embrace of love, offering to him a feast for the whole family, and tries to then explain. The father says, "Son, we had to celebrate and rejoice," telling us what must be going on in heaven, huh? Heaven has to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours, notice the father subtly correcting his son, subtly inviting his son, saying, "You know, if you're going to have a change of heart, which you must, every conversion must be two-directional, vertical and horizontal. No one can say they're closer to God if it doesn't bring them closer to their brother and sister, huh? Every conversion brings us back to Christ, brings us back to our family and to all of humanity." And so, he says, "This brother of yours was dead and has come back to life. He was lost and is found." God is in the lost and found business. As is necessarily then his church. What we see in the Father is what we must see in ourselves. Hard as it is. I think love can be both tough and tender, depending on the situation. He's kind and considerate, bending over backwards to each of them. But in terms of how we need to father and mother and be brother and sister in our family, I think there's a great model here for us in the presentation of the Father's love.
Amen.
Thank you for listening to Father Jim's Gospel Teaching. We hope you have been inspired and will subscribe to this weekly podcast and share it with your family and friends. The mission of Heart to Heart is to proclaim the good news of God's Son, Jesus, to the entire world. For more inspirational teachings by Father Jim and Father Michael, visit our website, www.htoh.us. May God bless your heart and the hearts of all your loved ones.